Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So coming from rural Minnesota, I don't think that there's a food that people love more than their beef sticks, right? People just absolutely love to be able to take that beef stick on the go. And the problem is so many beef sticks are so processed. They use such poor quality meat and meat that's from factory farms where they really don't treat the animals well. So Jen and I only use Paleo Valley. We love all their different flavors. Her favorite is the jalapeno. I love their garlic summer sausage. They have some amazing turkey sausages also, but it's all organic, all grass-finished beefs, pasture-raised turkeys. If you use code OPTIMAL, you can get 10% off your entire purchase. Head to the link in the show notes. Use code OPTIMAL at checkout.
All right. Up next on the podcast, we have Shannon Algio, and this is just one of my dearest friends. He is the sweetest soul, and he is just so deep and connected. And I know that do not turn off this podcast because you are going to want to listen to the entire thing. He is named one of the 35 under 35 wellness to watch by Wunderlist. He is a celebrated speaker, writer, life coach, yoga nidra, and meditation teacher. His popular podcast, Soul Feed, features interviews with iconic and cultural spiritual leaders like Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson, Danielle DePort, and so many others. His coaching practice, Algio works with clients to heal old patterns of trauma so they can show up in the world with power, presence, and purpose. One of the main things we're going to be talking through is his newly released book, Trust Your Truth, which you are going to want to get. So you can go to the link right now. It's trustyourtruthbook.com. He has so many goodies and bonuses as well that go with it that you don't want to miss out on. But truly, we're going to dive into so many practices to really uncover what that is for you. Shannon, I am so excited to have you on the podcast. First of all, congratulations on dropping your new book, Trust Your Truth. What a beautiful title. And I'm so excited for you.
Ah, thank you so much. Thank you. It's so wild, like writing a book for 3 years and then it actually comes out. Like there's a part of me that forgot that this is part of the process that people are going to actually receive and read the book. So thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It means a lot to me.
Of course. I mean, your message, everything that you talk about, it 100% resonates with who Dom and I are and the message that we're trying to get out to people. I mean, one of the My Intent bracelets that we wear around our wrist, and we got it when we were pretty early on dating.
Was it on your birthday?
It was on my birthday.
I'm pretty sure we decided to make them for each other because I had already made one.
Yeah.
And we were like, hey, let's make them for each other.
Yeah. And it says my truth. And it's like our reminder to always live into our truths for each other and for ourselves, which is just like, so see, it's just so synchronistic.
Yeah. Well, and how beautiful that you have a relationship where you both like celebrate and encourage each other to be in alignment with each other's truth individually and then also together. Like that's so important.
Especially because sometimes our truth can be difficult and can have some difficulties that come along with it. And a lot of the times I think people try and run from those. And I know we're going to dive into that specifically more so, but I think the title of your book is an amazing place to start because that's kind of what we ask everybody about. What drives them? Why is it that you do what you do and what makes you so passionate about that?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think, you know, so much of life I know has been for me in my past, like the world telling me who to be, you know, be less feminine, be more masculine was a message I got a lot growing up in Catholic school. You know, and when, once I embraced musical theater and went on that journey and was in college, I had to be a triple threat. And I had to be like a certain kind of performer, a certain kind of dancer. And so then I found myself kind of locked in my body in a way that dance used to be so freeing for me. And suddenly it became this like this prison that I had to be perfect all the time for my dance instructors. And so, I mean, you know, for those listening, there's so many ways that we internalize society's beliefs about who we need to be. And we just consume them and we digest them and they become a part of our own goals and visions for our own lives. And so I know for me on my path, I've had to look at these belief systems that I've internalized and reckon with them and say, wait a second, what actually matters to me? Who do I want to be? And do I need to subscribe to achieving this thing or making that amount of money or having this kind of car or having this kind of significant other? Like, do I need all of these things that I'm told to need in a certain way in order to be fulfilled, in order to be connected to myself and a higher power? And, you know, I've just found time and time again that I've had to a lot of times achieve certain things and then realize, oh, wait, this isn't bringing the meaning or fulfilling feeling that I was told it would. I need to go deeper inside of myself and make sure that I'm trusting my truth and living my life in alignment with the life I meant to live versus the one that I was told to.
Oh, yeah. And I think that is one of the hardest things to really understand. Is it my truth? Is it someone else's truth? Like, what am I living for and who am I living for? I know those are really tough questions to start to dive into. One, I want to know, like, why would someone even want to start to dissect this? Like, why is it even important for me to try to do the hard work and dive into the uncomfortable and see if I'm doing this for myself or society? And where do I even start?
Oh my gosh. Yes to that question. And I, you know, I think the thing that really comes up for me is, do we want to be conscious participants in the creation of the lives that we are meant to live? Mm-hmm. And I do believe that each of us is here to live a life that we are uniquely meant to live. We each have a purpose. We each have a calling. And while we are all connected to each other, there is an individuality to our expression that is seeking a flowering, a manifestation of its purpose. And so if we want to be consciously involved in the creation of that coming alive that each of us is capable of tapping into, then we want to listen to the whispers and the knocks before they become loud thuds or huge wake-up calls in our lives. And, you know, there's when you study the unconscious mind and look into, you know, the work of Carl Jung and the unconscious psyche, Carl Jung says something, I'm going to paraphrase this, that what we don't engage with consciously ends up becoming our fate. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if we don't look at our lives and check in with ourselves and listen to our bodies and get into relationship with our bodies when something feels off, honoring that it feels off, if I don't honor that it feels off, then eventually it will come up in a bigger way in my life that tells me it feels off. So to get like kind of practical about this, like our asses will be handed to us either way. So it's like, for me, I'm like, I want to be a conscious participant in learning the lessons as they come up as felt senses in my body versus waiting for the big loud, you know, bang or thing to happen in my life, which has also of course happened to me. And sometimes, and I bet you both can relate to this in your own ways, we need those loud thuds from life to get in alignment with our truth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so amazing. And I love how, you know, some of the languaging you're using, you're talking a lot about listening to that intuition or that subconscious mind and those things that come up. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, we as humans like to think with our brain. We like to think in our head, right? And some people will say, like, I don't know why I did it. I just listened to my gut. And I know you like to talk about that gut intuition and what that actually means and where that's coming from. So can you dissect that a bit?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll share a story about this because I feel like the story illuminates like exactly how this can work in a very practical way. So our gut, or our and more than just the gut, oftentimes the feeling is in the gut, but we have all sorts of different like sensations in the body that are communicating to us. Like, you know, from an optimal body perspective, like if your shoulder is feeling something, if there's some sort of sensation or pain, that might cue you to do some investigation around the cause of that physical pain. It's very similar with emotional pain. And sometimes emotional pain is felt as a physical sensation in the body. Mm. And for me, I was in a relationship that was about 3 years. And Jen, I know you know this. Dom, you might know aspects of this as well. And for about a year, a little under a year, I kept having these feelings in my gut that told me something is off here. And the way that showed up was I felt like my partner was either cheating on me or didn't want a monogamous relationship or had his eyes on other guys. And my body told me, my body was like my stomach was in a knot. And that feeling in my body sent a message to my head that something is happening here. And so what I did is I went to my ex, my boyfriend at the time, and I said to him, I feel like something is going on here. Are you cheating on me with this guy? Is this thing happening? Do you want to be in a monogamous relationship? And this happened multiple times, many times over the course of a year. And every time his defense mechanism was to deflect, lie, often get angry. And I left these fights that we would have feeling, what's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. Why can't I trust him? Why do I have these trust issues? I need to go back and look at my parents and my family. Like, what is wrong with me? And so I internalized his lies to mean something about me. And I believed his lies because I wanted to. I wanted to believe in his truth. I wanted to believe that he wanted to be in a monogamous relationship, that he wasn't cheating on me. And when he told me eventually that what I had been feeling was actually happening. We had already moved across the country from New York to LA. We got a car together and an apartment and furniture, dishes, and all of the things. And when he told me, I was actually astonished by how I felt in my body when he told me the truth. I felt supercharged. Like all of a sudden, all of these energetic leaks that I was losing by believing in that false reality, those cords were cut and I got empowered. I was like, holy shit, I can actually see what's happening now. And, you know, that was a really, really painful breakup for me. And it was devastating. There was so much grief. I was lost in many ways because I was in this new city and just getting my footing. But I am so grateful for that relationship and that experience because I know that Shannon needed to go through that in order to realize that those feelings in my body are real. My intuition is real. And I need to learn how to develop a relationship to listening and trusting that even when my mind and my cognition can't make sense of it.
So many snaps and so many, you know, parallels in what I have experienced. And I know you know that as well. And exactly what you said, like these cords being cut so that you can finally feel, that is almost identical to the feeling that I had. Like, of course, there's a surge of anxiety. There's a surge of heartbreak. But there's also this freedom of I can let go of feeling like I am a crazy. I can let go of these feelings that I'm wrong. And I, all of a sudden, everything I knew to be true deeper inside is true. And what that means is I get a freedom of listening to these distractions and mistrusting myself and actually get to trust myself. Like, it is the most powerful message that I think a human can receive, is the ability to say, I am not wrong, I am not crazy, and I can trust this inner knowing without making judgments on it of who's wrong or who's bad or anything, but just knowing. And it's so powerful. But do you think that you would have gotten that and you would have been able to come into that within your body had he not told you? And had you walked away sooner?
First of all, I just have to name, because if we were in the same room together, you would see like the goosebumps on my arms and just listening to you speak and feeling that like connection and resonance. You know, I think I'll never forget one of my yoga teachers and mentors and friends, Sean Korn, who, if you don't know Sean, she's an amazing yoga teacher and real like leader in the yoga community. And I remember when I studied with her years ago and did her vinyasa yoga training, she would talk about how, you know, she would cue the healthy, proper alignment in her classes. And she would say it again and again and again. Sometimes she would say it again because she could see that a student wasn't listening or was doing something else that she knew was physiologically harmful for the alignment of the body. And she said that something I'll never forget, that sometimes we need to pull our hamstring, or we need the back to go out, or we need the physical, we need to go too far. Obviously, that's not ideal, like optimal body here, but sometimes we need to go too far. And we learn so much through the healing, through learning how to take care of that injury, that I think that I needed it to go that far. I needed to stay in the relationship too long. That's what I needed. Now, hopefully, and I believe now, I don't need that again. Like, I got it. I don't need it to be like that again. But when I look deeper, and this is a lot of what the work in the book invites us to do, is that so many of the patterns of codependency, and I'll just define codependency for everyone here based on my experience of it. Codependency is when I need you to be okay in order for me to feel okay. I can't be in my okayness, in my enoughness, in my center, unless that thing or that person or that circumstance is what I need it to be. So I become hooked and attached to the other person. And so much of what replicated itself in my relationship with my ex was the dynamic of the ecosystem of the family I grew up in, and my parents' relationship, and codependent patterns within my own family. And so I needed, and I know this deeply, I needed that to happen with a significant other outside of my family relationship so that I could look back and really start to take care of little Shannon. Shannon, who was like 7 years old, 6 years old, and going through some gnarly stuff in my home, and choose and start to be able to make a new pattern of healing within myself. And so, yeah, for me, it had to get that bad. But I think if we consciously engage with the lessons, once we start to get them, it doesn't necessarily and likely won't get that bad again.
Hmm. I think that's such a cool analogy you use. Kind of, it brings it into the PT world for me with the hamstring strain or the back going out. But, you know, especially coming around to how you relate it back into what's happened in your life previously. And, you know, especially if we're sticking with, say, that hamstring example, when we have strained it before, we might in the future put ourselves in an environment or be in an environment that might trigger, per se, that. And I know that that's a word a lot of people will throw around, but there's not many words that can as accurately define, like, when something out there triggers us. I don't care how much self-care you do, how balanced you are, how zen you come into a room. There might be something in there that sparks something inside you and triggers you based on something that's happened in your past. So I guess one of my questions is, if something presents itself to you that starts to flush some of those things to the surface, do you have any recommendations on how people can bring themselves back to their center?
I love that. And like, as someone who had a hamstring injury, like, I know what it's like for something like that to be re-triggered. And like, to what you're speaking about, it's like, there can be, sometimes we have like an asymptomatic injury, and just because we don't feel it doesn't mean it's not there and doesn't need our care. And that's so much of what can happen emotionally when all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I thought I totally completely healed that and I never have to feel that again. And then it's like, boop, like, oh, here, I'm triggered. And yeah, so a lot of what's in the book is my own practice of meditation and yoga nidra, which is the art of transformational sleep, deep relaxation, connecting to the ground and to the earth. And so there's what I learned from one of my teachers, Hala Khouri, who's a somatic psychotherapist and yoga teacher, is when we get triggered, our center, so literally if you like feel your center right now, like right at your core, somewhere around your core, in between your core and your heart, when we get triggered, our power gets pinged to that which triggered us. Whatever that thing is outside of us that triggered us, the person, the circumstance, the bill, the comment from a parent, the physical sensation of anxiety, all of a sudden, our power gets sent over to that thing outside of us. And so similar to that pattern of codependency, if I stay tethered energetically to that thing outside of me, I'm going to be like a puppet, a marionette, like hooked to that thing. And so a lot of the work, the specific work when we are triggered is like, how can I bring my power back, my energy back to my center? And, you know, breathing techniques are really good for this, like starting to increase the length of the inhales and increase the length of the exhales. And also for me, what really works is feeling my feet on the ground and actually like bringing my awareness back to my body, because my mind wants to start to strategize, what can I do to manipulate the outer circumstances to make myself feel better? But really the question that I ask myself now is, what can I do to ground, breathe, and resource myself in my body to make myself okay despite whatever is happening around me? And it doesn't mean that I'm not impacted by what's happening around me or that I no longer care at all about anything happening outside. It just means that I'm increasing my capacities to be in my body, to breathe, and to feel grounded and connected to my center, instead of depending on the external to change.
So huge, because especially when you go through anything, and there's no comparison of like traumas, right? Like big, small, whatever you've been through from childhood, through relationships, through life, you know, whatever it is, there's always usually these little triggers, something that is making you anxious, something that's making you angry. And being able to come back to your truth, essentially, of who you are, rather than allowing that external to continue to run your life and continue to make you angry, and you're always going to blame someone else or something else. It's so key, not only for yourself, but for everyone around you. And I think especially like if you have kids, if you have significant others, if you have people around you in general, friends, like, don't you want to show up in a way that speaks so truly to you that you allow other people to be them, you know, rather than having these inauthentic relationships or people not showing up as fully themselves? It's like, how could you continue to come back to your center so that you show the example and be the truth of what other people can see in themselves? And I think essentially, like, that is what your book does. That's what your book allows people to start to understand again. And that's so powerful, Shannon, like giving people access to their own truth is so, just so powerful. What are some of the tips and the tools that you recommend? I mean, obviously grab the book 100% first, but just in general right now, how can someone start to say, okay, I want to come back into me. I want to understand this gut thing. I want to understand my truth. Like, what are some practices that people can just start doing right now?
I love that so much. One of the practices in the book that I think is just practical and helpful, especially when we're dealing with emotions. So just as a kind of context thing, the book is set up in alignment with the seven chakras, which are the seven energy centers of the body. And so we're exploring finding your truth, exploring your truth in each of these seven energy centers. So your groundedness, your sense of belonging in your body, your hips, your relationships and your creativity, your solar plexus, your sense of like identity and self and me, that part of you, that ego self. And I say ego, not meaning good or bad, just that ego self that says like, I'm going to do this. Like, this is my life. And then the heart and getting connected to your emotions. So many of us were not taught how to value our emotions. And in fact, we're taught how to devalue our emotions and not feel them. So speaking truth, seeing the truth, getting clear about what's true in your own mind, and then connecting to a higher power, which is like a higher truth. And so that's what we move through in the book. And in the fourth chakra, we talk about the emotions, like I said, and one of the tools in that is something called NFPL. And it's this process of which can be done really fast, or you can kind of slow it down for yourself, but it's notice, feel, process, let go. And so when something tough comes up for you emotionally, and for me, I talk about in the chapter my experiences with grief and rage, because those are really two intense emotions that I think if you can learn to work with those big ones, you can kind of apply them to all the other areas. But to notice, to simply notice, and this is where consciousness comes in and awareness, like, oh, like I am feeling heat in my body. My chest is hot. My heart is pounding. And then feel. And so many of us want to bypass the feel. And I have a lot of compassion for that, because feeling can be scary. I say in the book, like one of the bravest journeys is the journey inward, because to explore the embodied sense of wisdom and trauma and resilience and all of the colors of our human experience, to feel that, we have been taught that some emotions are okay to feel and some are not. Mm-hmm. And so feeling is this process of, for me, I have to breathe. And when I hold my breath, I know I'm trying to not feel. When I breathe, I allow the feeling to kind of expand in my body. So notice and then feel and then process. And I know for me, I like to jump to the process, because I like to understand, like, where is this coming from? And why is this happening? And what did my mom say that made me do this? You know, like I get all into the processing. But I think processing is best done once we've allowed ourselves to feel. And I think therapy is so, 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 so powerful. I've had such a transformative experience in it. But even if you don't have a therapist, get your pen out and just like write stream of consciousness furiously, just go, 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 like write in your journal and process like what is coming out of you. Process can also look like movement. And it often does for me, like a high intensity workout or a run or sweating or a hike, like something that gets my energy moving, and then let go. And let go can be done consciously, but oftentimes it's kind of just what happens when we allow ourselves to notice, to feel, and to process. Then we can let go. And the irony is that when we want to let go before we've actually done that processing, that's when these triggers and these tensions get lodged in the body and lodged in our psyche. Because if we try and rush through it, we don't give ourselves the experience that we need to have that full release.
Honestly, it was my turns to get my truth bumps during that one, because to be honest, you were describing something that I've really recently started trying to practice myself. And I just started seeing a therapist, official, like a formal therapist for the first time, which is something in my life that I know that, you know, would have been great for me to dive into earlier. I'm very glad that I'm doing it now. And he and I talked through a process that I think really mirrors what you just outlined with the NFPL. Did I get that right? Technique.
Yeah. I always have to do it myself.
Right. Just like talk through that quick. But he described it to me as what he called the SOBER acronym, which was stop, observe, breathe, expand, and then respond. And in a very similar way, it was me talking with him about what I can do when the room's on fire, you know, I can walk in as cool and calm as a cucumber, but as soon as the room's on fire, what the hell do you do with all that energy? And that was the process that we talked through. And I really, really appreciate you sharing that with everybody. And something that you said before too, as you were going through all the chakras, you mentioned the ego and you said, not good or bad, but that's the ego. And I think when we talk about the ego a lot, we paint it in this bad light. And I'd love for you to talk into the ego and what you see the ego as and how there can be aspects of the ego that we need to harness.
Oh my gosh. I love this question. And thank you for sharing your experience, Dom. That I definitely resonate with that and would love to talk with you more about it. So I think we need to be so mindful of when we are in a good or bad paradox. Because it happens so easily. And it's like this extreme thinking of something is absolute. It's either completely good or it's completely bad. And whenever we notice that we're in that kind of paradigm, we want to become mindful, because that's when we move away from the truth. When we move towards an absolute, we move away from the truth, because the truth encompasses the whole. And it has space for every aspect of our humanity. And by integrating all of those aspects, we can connect to the truth. So with the ego, like, the ego totally gets a bad rap, and it almost is like synonymous with something that we're constantly fighting. But the, you know, and what I'm learning in school for psychology is that the ego is the structure that gives us a sense of the world. If we don't have an ego, we are identityless. We don't have the ego structure in our own psyche to be like, I am Shannon and I'm going to write a book, or even let alone like, I am Shannon and I'm going to like have a home and understand like who Jen and Dom are and who my parents are. Like, ego is a structure that gives us a filter to organize our realities. And without ego, we are in just outer space chaos. So the ego is necessary because it gives us the opportunity to harness our power as individuals and to make sense of our lives. But where the ego gets tricky is when we become self-obsessed, when we over-identify with it, when we get stuck in the me-ness, as in me, and lose our connection to our wholeness, as in our interconnectivity with the people we love and the whole world and the planet. And so with any aspect of any part of ourselves, be that our rage or our egos or our grief or our desire or our sexuality, we need to integrate the shadow and the light. How is this showing up for me in a shadow sense, in a unconscious sense, in a sense of being connected to maybe my limitations or my trauma, but also how is this showing up for me as a part of my awakening, as a part of my conscious light, as a part of something beautiful and something that could be used powerfully. And like, Dom, you named the rage. Well, you didn't say the word rage, but you talked about that like heat and anger. And this is something that I've really had to deal with, because what happened with me is my dad's impatience and his fury when he would get upset when I was little scared me so much that I said, that's wrong. That's not okay. That's harmful. And while that was a protective mechanism to separate me from my dad's anger, it also became unconsciously a judgment of my own anger. Mm-hmm. And because I wouldn't allow myself to feel my anger as a healthy emotion, I repressed it unconsciously and suppressed it consciously whenever I was aware of it. And what I learned, I don't know if you can relate to this, but like, suppressing and repressing anger guarantees that the fire is going to grow stronger and explode at a later date. And so once I learned to not judge my anger, but find healthy ways to process it, like for me, I beat my couch with a pillow. Once I learned to move that fire and that energy through my body, then I could say, okay, these are healthy ways to process the anger, and these are harmful ways. And because I'm committed as much as possible to not causing harm to myself and others, I'm going to choose as much as I can the healthy outlets for the fire.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, that was one of my huge processing things as well when I came out of the cheating and the triggers and all of that, is that I had rage. I had anger, right? Both at myself and the situation for staying and not listening. And I hadn't released it. You know, I had talked, I had moved somatically, I had done other work, and I understood where I was, but I hadn't released. And especially, you know, I mean, I think it is a little bit more popular for men to release some anger in different ways or different practices with activities, but it's not as common to allow, I mean, I guess humans in general, but I do see a lot with women is like, you got to look and act a certain way.
I think it's the expectation.
Yeah.
It seems okay for men to express that, when I think societally it's always been women aren't, it's not okay to express that rage.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so when I was given a safe container to be able to do it, my goodness, the energy that I felt like coursing through my arms was unbelievable and a huge, huge part of my healing. And I love that you even brought up, you know, hitting a couch and finding ways that make it safe and acceptable to find ways to be able to release that and acknowledge that you do have anger, acknowledge that you do have rage. And again, not making it right or wrong, I think is so, it's so beautiful, because you're giving people the permission to be human, experience all of what it is to feel human, and then how do we process best for ourselves.
I love that so much. And Jen, like, look at you, because of your bravery and your readiness to really release that anger. And I remember the videos of you going and doing the activity where you smash things.
Yeah.
At like a
rage ground.
What are they called?
It was called Rage Ground in LA.
Yes. Oh my God. Rage Ground. But like, by you going through that process, you made space for your connection to yourself and your truth to return home to your homeostasis. But also you created space within yourself and in your life, so that when you met Dom, you were like ready for that. You weren't holding on to certain things that you may have been unconsciously holding on to had you not done that. So I think it just, like, I don't know, I feel like your experience speaks to how powerful that is to let yourself go through that process, especially as a woman.
Yeah. I mean, let's be real. I still had a lot of triggers that Dom got to see and allow me space to work through, hey, for sure.
I did not come without my own as well. So let's get that clear.
But yes, a beautiful and necessary part of us as individuals to be able to just allow space for the other person to be a human and evolve and grow. And that's continuously what we're working in toward.
I need to have you both on Soulfeed together to talk about how you show up in relationship with each other when these things come up. Like, because I think it's so powerful to like model that it's okay for things to come up in relationships, and like there's ways to work with yourself and with each other when those things come up, because it's not like just, you just said, like, it's not going to be this perfect relationship where all of our triggers are behind us. Like, they will bubble up in relationship with the people that we care about the most, because those are the opportunities for us to heal even more deeply.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think perfection in a relationship lies more in our definition of that. And, you know, who says that allowing our triggers to come up and working through them as a couple is not perfection in our own container? And I think that's what people in relationships need to start to be able to reframe, is that it doesn't look a certain way and it never will. And if you go in with that expectation, you know, you're going to be setting yourself up for failure and disappointment to some extent. And, you know, within relationships, but we've talked about storing these emotions. And when we don't share, when we don't dive in, we might be storing that anger that we brought up. And I know right now you're in grad school and you're doing a lot of work on kind of that intersection of the psychic and the somatic, or the mind and the body, and how those interact. And can you just talk a little bit to how, when we suppress these things, how it might start to present in our body as pain or as different symptoms?
Yeah. I love that question. And it's just so powerful, like having practiced and taught yoga for the last 10 years and then danced for the 10 years before that. It's like my body already knows so much of the information that I'm now learning in school, just intuitively through working through things in the body. Mm-hmm. And so now to like weave in the somatic psychotherapy and the larger context of psychotherapeutic work, knowing what I know about how the body works is just like this wild experience of like marriage of these aspects of myself. And I think it's like the, you know, one of the tools of somatic psychotherapy and somatic experiencing, which was created by Peter Levine, is this practice of titrating. And before I share what that is, I think it's really helpful to share Peter Levine's definition of trauma, which I share in the book. And the way he defines trauma, I think, is really, really important for us to remember that trauma is not just really intense events or like a school shooting or like a car accident. He defines trauma as anything that overwhelms our capacity to cope and leaves us feeling hopeless, helpless, or unable to respond. So it's anything that overwhelms our capacity to cope. And to your point, Jen, about like, you mentioned like, you know, there's not really use in us comparing traumas or comparing wounds. People's capacity to cope is different person to person, based on your upbringing, based on your, maybe your DNA, based on your own temperament and your own personality and capacity. And so we want to have a lot of compassion for ourselves, you know, when we might be experiencing trauma. And give ourselves the spaces to heal and not say like, oh, well, it's not like this happened to me. It's not like I was in that kind of family growing up, so I don't have anything to look at. It's like, we really want to give ourselves the space to have compassion for those areas where we felt like we didn't have a capacity to cope and we felt like hopeless as a result. Mm-hmm. And for the body, so back to this idea of titrating, and I would love to talk to you both more about this, because I think with the intersection of physical therapy and embodied work, it's really fascinating. So titrating is when you revisit a site of injury or a traumatic event in your life, but you connect into how the body is feeling and the sensations and the emotions that are coming up as you revisit that traumatic event cognitively. And so what we want to do with somatic psychotherapy is you don't want to tip into overwhelm, which could possibly cause re-traumatization. If you get totally overwhelmed in the experience of therapy, the therapist wants to be tracking the client or the patient and stay with them in a sensitive space of like, you have the capacity to look at this memory right now. And as soon as you don't have the capacity anymore, because you feel that coming up in the body in a form of maybe extreme anxiety or overwhelm, then the patient communicates that to the therapist and they apply grounding practices, breathing into the body, feeling the feet on the ground, maybe even getting on the ground, like lowering the body to the ground, deepening the breath. And so it's this way of working with trauma while training the nervous system to maybe just go a little bit further into the discomfort, but not go so far that it's too far. Mm-hmm. And so that awareness of, I mean, just talking about trust your truth, is like, it's okay if enough is enough in therapy or in a conversation. It's if you're feeling like you can't handle something, like, it is okay to ask for space, to take a step back, to ground, to resource yourself. And I think these tools, the research behind these tools is that if we can revisit these repressed or suppressed aspects of our past, and bring our bodies along for the journey and allow our nervous systems to slowly adjust increment by increment, then we might actually be able to face things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to face.
Such a beautiful just depiction of how that all works and even how people can start exploring it, you know, within themselves in a gradual practice. And it's something that comes up for me a lot in terms of talking with other clinicians. We were just talking with a good friend last night who is diving more into, you know, trying to put research around this to prove, you know, the somatic experience within the body that's causing pain, that's causing all these other issues, and how we can put practical studies so people start to really use it in practice. Because the reality is, when you're in a physical therapy setting and you have other clinicians around you, you have other therapists around you and patients, it's, I mean, would you feel safe going on the ground and crying? Probably not, you know, or yelling or emoting, whatever it needs to come out based on what you're feeling within your body. And even just the way that you were talking about it really relates it back to one of the retreats I had done with someone named Krista Petty, and she's a somatic healer of sorts, therapist, but she is all about the body and she's all about your own experience and just moving and where's that movement coming from? What's restricted? Like what we got to see, it was only a women's retreat as well, which was so beautiful. And what I got to see, like sometimes if women were barely opening their legs or, you know, walking, but really tight in their hips, sometimes they've had sexual trauma. And you don't realize how much it's manifesting into the body. There's might not be pain, but there's still tension. There's still protection. There's still tightness. And it's just such an interesting thing to continue to explore. And I love that you're, you know, doing the work and in grad school and just going to help to bring this this education to the world. But, you know, and so that we don't keep you forever. I also just want to know, what is it that you're hoping people get from your book, you know, from getting it and reading it, maybe coming back to it a few times? What do you really want? What do you really hope for the reader?
Thank you. I think that, you know, I worked very intentionally to write this book to be a mirror to the reader that, you know, I am not a guru or a know-it-all or like, and I certainly don't have the answers to what your truth is. And so as best as I possibly could, I made this book stories from my own personal transformation, meditation and grounding practices that are kind of woven through the book, and self-inquiry journaling prompts that point you towards your truth. I can't possibly know the lessons that are going to come up for you. But I really wanted to write this book for someone who has reached the tipping point and is kind of just done with playing out old patterns. Because, I mean, that's how the patterns work. They come up. And then if we don't deal with them, it'll come back up. And then if we don't deal with it, then it'll come back up. And so when we are just like done with that, my hope is that Trust Your Truth meets you where you are at and is a loving, kind, compassionate, gentle guide that is also going to light a little bit of a fire under your ass and say, yeah, you can do this. And my greatest hope is that the reader takes away just one deep, aha, grounded lesson for themselves that I, Shannon, couldn't possibly imagine. But by doing the work in the book or just having something reflected through one of my stories, that the reader will be able to connect to their truth in a more powerful way. And so I'm so grateful to be able to share about the book and to be having this rich and deep conversation with you, Jen and Dom. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And I just flagged about like seven things that I want to talk to you guys about further on future podcasts or when we go to dinner. Like, yes. There's so much to talk about.
Shannon, that was an absolute beautiful way to kind of wrap it all in a bow. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. Thank you for putting out this book that's really going to be an incredible tool guide for so many people that will be able to meet them where they're at. I mean, knowing you and the conversations that we've had, I know that you're going to be able to provide the opportunity for people to have those aha moments you're talking about. So other than the link in our show notes, of course, where can people go to find this book? Where can people go to learn more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, so the book is available at trustyourtruthbook.com, trustyourtruthbook.com. And there's also with the book, for anyone who purchases it, a series of bonus gifts. So there's a guided meditation album, and there's a meditation for each chapter, which corresponds with each chakra. And there's also some embodied deep relaxation practices, and a movement medicine practice, which is going to incorporate some yoga and some high intensity and some twerking. So definitely go to trustyourtruthbook.com and make sure to get the bonuses if you get the book. I'm also narrating the book, which is like one of my most favorite parts of the process. So the audiobook is available as well. And I'm shannon.algio on Instagram. And you can also find me stalking Dom and Jen and just celebrating their beautiful relationship and love for the rest of time. So find me there too.
Oh my goodness. We love you. Well, we'll definitely have to talk to you again. And I can't wait to squeeze you in person. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.